Blog Talk Radio.
This is what it is, okay? I said, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darryl, and Debert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to the Grindhouse. You know what time it is. It's pulp, pop, and politics time. Of course, politics that'll take place in the second half for Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternerd Radio. Folks, we have a lot to get into, so we're going to try. Emphasis on the word try to keep our comments terse and succinct because there's just so much to cover. San Diego is on fire right now. San Diego Comic-Con, that is. So there's a lot of information coming out from that particular event. And, you know, we are a rambunctious bunch, a rambunctious sort. So we'll try to keep our excitement down to, let's say, 50%. Let's say 50%. But I have to be honest, as a self-avowed Afro nerd, I'm extremely, extremely happy about what's coming out from Comic-Con. So without further ado, let's go to a quick, and I do mean quick, a quick groove, a nerdcore groove, and then when we get back, we'll talk about comic books and stuff. This is Adam Warrock, Spider-Woman. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
You are now listening to the West Coast of MJ's mixtape.
Fight this through with my full capabilities. Then she put me in correctional facilities. And just because we're on opposing sides of good and bad, I saw a Spider-Woman strength and then I got it bad. I'm writing poetry, hoping that she'll hear 'em. My technique, it lacks an extra dose of super serum. Blame Kang the Conqueror, he said he's into it, but I don't think he understands women for a damn minute. Take her flowing hair or the boots she wears. She could be a Skrull, yo, then I really don't care. When I dream of fairy tales, all I think is seeing Jesse. She's my type of hype and I can't stand to let my henchmen tell me. I know I'm bad and I seem made of stone, but that don't mean a villain never feels alone. Cause even in yellow, red and black regalia, I take a chance, maybe ask her to the same pocket stand. Cause it's known to just get a brother somewhere. And somewhere with Spider-Woman's even better than nowhere. The Grim Reaper's simply evil, and maybe I'll just have to wait for the movie sequel.
Spider-Woman, I'ma find your way. And I'ma wrap up with you all in my hands. Put the mic to my time, you will be the dead. But I'd rather look at what the man has said.
What shit?
All right, enough of that. Once again, that is Adam Warrock, and that was Spider-Woman. The call in number, folks, join us. The water is warm. This is the Comic Shop, as presented by Afternerd Radio, the Grindhouse Saturdays edition. The call in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. And of course, folks, stick around. At 7 o'clock, we have our infamous Afternerd Radio show. But now, the store is open. It is the Comic Shop. And first up, we have the Captain. Captain, come on in. Let's get to it. And then, of course, there is the indestructible Daryl B.
Only took him 6 years after I Am Legend to get this dang thing right, didn't it?
Listen, gentlemen, we got to keep our conversation somewhat terse and informative at the same time. I don't want to really get into filibustering so much because there's just too much stuff to get into with, let's say, 50 minutes remaining. First up, we got to talk about San Diego Comic-Con, the event of the year, although obviously we're New Yorkers, so the New York Comic-Con means a lot to us, but the media, they focus on San Diego. Everything is coming out of this thing. What have you heard thus far, Daryl, and you know, we'll just chop it up. What are your thoughts about what you're hearing so far?
What I've heard so far is if DC and Warner Brothers can deliver on half of the thing they promised, then, you know what, they quote-unquote won this San Diego Comic-Con. But the problem is, and I told you guys this behind the off the air, all right? 2 years ago, they promised a lot of stuff, and they only delivered on the Green Lantern movie, all right? 2 years ago. Because remember, there was the Green Arrow movie that was supposed to come out. That never happened. The Wonder Woman movie. That didn't happen. JLA, they talked about it 2 years ago. That didn't come up. So I believe the Superman-Batman movie, I believe the Flash movie, I believe the Justice League movie when I'm in the theater watching it. That's on the DC side, okay? And a quick aside, and I said this joke too, how quickly did Warner Brothers in DC get back into bed with Legendary Pictures? How quick? Because Legendary Pictures, Man of Steel. But right after Man of Steel, Warner Brothers went, we're ending our partnership with them. We're going to go into a new direction. And then Pacific Rim came out. Okay, we need them back. We're back. I don't recall hearing the announcement how they signed back together to do these films. So, hey, you know what? Well, at least Warner Brothers and DC realized their mistake. As far as Marvel goes, my thing is more on their TV and book side. They're putting a whole lot of eggs together in this Hunger Infinity, cataclysm. Basket right there. They're putting all of their eggs in that basket. Is this going to be another siege? Is this going to be another secret invasion type thing? We have to see if they could pull this off, okay? Because the premise is interesting. And I'm not going to reveal too much of the premise. Everybody's got a computer now. Yeah, I don't know how you're listening to us without a computer, but you can look it up for yourself because I don't want to be spoil sport with that stuff. All right, if they could pull it off, it'd be great. It would remind me of Crisis in a way, all right, if they could pull it off. But the other big news, September 24th, we finally got a date. September 24th, the S.H.I.E.L.D. show, I can't wait. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I have to confess there's a lot of information coming out. I wouldn't disagree with you, but, I mean, you know, listen, the Green Arrow did come to us in television form. I don't know if a Green Arrow film would have been that great. Well, who am I to say? I mean, I'll say this much. I think that there's a lot more fire in their bellies at WB to do something because of what happened with Marvel. They can't allow Marvel to make all the money. They're literally leaving money on the table if they don't explore their own analogous property. So I think... I have a lot more belief that something's going to come down now. We have dates, and we have some pretty important folks that are making the announcement. Zack Snyder coming off of his triumph with Man of Steel. Whether we like or dislike Man of Steel or not, Man of Steel is approaching $700 million. That's enough power to start calling some shots and start making things happen. So for this Batman-Superman movie to be announced with an official logo at San Diego Comic-Con by Zack Snyder himself, I think that's pretty big. A Flash movie in 2016, and then in 2017 we're talking about a JLA. That makes I'm feeling a little bit more comfortable with the timelines because there was this great emphasis on a JLA movie to come up on 2015, the same time that Avengers 2 is coming on. I just don't see that being feasible. Maybe two characters for a world's finest or a Batman Superman movie, that comes off a lot more realistic to me. We're hearing that they're looking for a new Batman. I don't know how I feel about that. You know, I guess it's logistically makes sense, but you know, Nolan's involved in this too. I mean, how can you have Nolan and Snyder involved in this thing again, and then you don't have the Batman that we all know and love from the trilogy? I'm a little bit nervous about that. A lot more information coming out with other properties. I, Frankenstein footage was shown. A Hunger Games, you know, the Hunger Games sequel that was also put out there. I mean, it's just so much information. They're hinting at an X-Force movie. So, and also, well, you know, something else, while we're on this, I'm gonna go to the captain, and then I'm going to go back to Daryl, because Daryl has provided me with a link, and you can go to afronerd.com to our listening audience. We have the latest blog posting by Daryl B. himself. Just check it out. A lot of links, a lot of things on his regarding his opinion on things. But you hinted, but you highlighted that Hugh Jackman himself, Wolverine himself, is putting out there that there needs to be a cohesive Marvel universe. So I don't know how much weight he has, but when the actor himself says, okay, we got to figure out something, that's big. But I want to go to the captain to get his opinion on San Diego Comic-Con and some of these properties that are starting to see the light of day. And then I want to go back to Daryl about Mr. Jackman's comments. Captain?
Okay. All right. So the JLA movie timeline, 2013 now, 4 years, that's a lot more feasible, but I'm thinking more along the lines of 2018, because these guys, they spend 2 years doing special effects, and then it takes them another year to put the script together. Then, for the right actors that they want, they have to line them up. It's not just laying out money, because sometimes those actors, it's 2013, a lot of times you're booked up to 2016 with the type of A-list actors that you want already. That's how it normally works. So 2017 for JLA, the timeline sounds a lot more feasible, but more like probably 2018. It's probably a lot of times not that easy. Now, here's another interesting thing. The way Zack Snyder does his special effects, he can actually throw it together faster than something that you see like Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim will take longer. A lot longer than the way someone like Zack Snyder does effects. So that helps with the timeline, believe it or not. That can shave 6 months. You know, so I think because of competition, and they always say, they tell you this when you're small, they tell you at high school, and they also tell you at college level also, but it starts when you're small. Competition brings out the best. If you're not under pressure to a certain extent, you know, you don't go in and do your best. So I think we will get to see, not all, as Daryl says, but I'm not, you know, as dubious as Mr. Daryl, but you will get some of these properties within the timeline. So that's good for us, the geeks and nerds, from that standpoint, you know. So Comic-Con is putting on the pressure for these things essentially to happen, because as I said before, the geeks and nerds eventually inherit the earth. It is they who actually decide actually what happens. Not the feral menstrual beast. I know it's the Afro Nerd segment. I just had to get it in there. All the back over to you, sir, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, and also, you know, this Batman Superman thing was kind of sort of greenlit, what, like 10 years ago? I mean, it was discussion of a Batman Superman movie before, so some of these folks might be picking up the scraps from the write-up. I mean, you know, some of these things went into, like, full production mode 10 years ago, so you don't know if there's some leftover stuff from that, or, you know, you don't know. You know, there's a history of people reusing sets from other movies.
This is true.
You know, I'm going back to the 60s now, but I'm thinking of Star Trek and Wild Wild West. those two, if you look at Wild Wild West, there were some Star Trek sets on that. So Hollywood's not afraid to reuse and to channel old props or old ideas and make them fresh again. So we'll see. Now, Daryl, you know, you brought this to my attention. It's on the blog, again, folks, afronerd.com. The links are there, and also Daryl's own musings, pop and pulp cultural musings. But you brought out this piece, this interview with Hugh Jackman, where he really goes into detail about there needing to be something done. Well, first of all, he's one of the few actors I've seen that has really embraced the Wolverine, or embraced a singular character. I mean, he's done a lot of work. He's done Broadway. He sings. He does it all. So there's no real fear of typecasting. And we know he's a real actor, as they say. But he's also the kind of guy that it seems to be having fun with the character, and he has no problems playing the character, I guess, a few more times. He just doesn't seem to have that hesitancy. Everyone else gets real, you know, real she foo-foo, I can't do it anymore, I can't, nah. You know, but this guy doesn't seem to be that way. And he's very open about Fox and Sony, to the listening audience. What I'm referencing is that some folks have a real simplistic view of how Marvel operates. I mean, there's Marvel Entertainment, there's Disney, there's Sony, and there's Fox. And although they're all Marvel properties, it's not that simple, unfortunately, with the legality of things, with our society being so litigious. It's just not that simple to see Wolverine and the X-Men in a Amazing Spider-Man film or in a Avengers film. So, Daryl, tell us what's going on with Jackman and the feasibility of what he's talking about.
I spotted this off of a Comic Book Resources spinoff online sister site, all right? And I saw Hugh Jackman mention this, and the thing I immediately thought of was what Guillermo del Toro said about Man of Steel, about how, oh, don't worry, when I do Dark Universe, Shadow Pack, Justice League Dark, I'm going to make sure that you will know it's a unified universe. Hugh Jackman is a businessman. He is a convert to the comic ways, because he admittedly did not pick up comic books until the X-Men role was given to him, you know, or he won it, or depending on how who's asking the question, you know. He's aware of that. But even he knows, hey, if we manage to somehow get everybody into one movie, oh, my God, we will all make lots of money. What is preventing us from doing this? You know, he asked it himself. Wait, you mean we can't get together and make this? Why can't we? That's exactly what Hugh Jackman just said. And you know what? I applaud him for it, because he's using common sense. Hey, it's going to make us money. What, you hate making money? Why don't you want to make money? It's the same thing I've been saying with DC when it came to a JLA film. It's the same thing I said when we had the hiatus with X-Men, oh my God, Fox, you have the rights. There's so many different parts of the X universe that you can make into films. What, you hate money? And Hugh Jackman's just speaking with us nerds, us geeks, us lovers of comic books, us lovers of the cartoons, have said for years, and all of a sudden, oh, now we're going to have an X-Force film. What, really? All of a sudden? You know, it's that sort of thing. You have a bigger universe. We don't need to see the same 30 or 40 characters on screen for every film. And if you have the Golden Goose right there with the Avengers film, why are you fighting? That's essentially what Jackman is saying. Because, hey, the Avengers, and you throw in a web slinger this way, and you throw in this mutant that pops claws this way, you even hit that. We're talking not millions of dollars, we're talking billions. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, that is something. We are talking about billions now. I mean, you know, we could think about Hollywood of old. And when you compare the numbers that you were dealing with, I mean, you know, movies back then might have cost $1 million. I think Cleopatra. How much did Cleopatra cost back? And I think it might have been maybe $10 million or $5 million. I know that Elizabeth Taylor, she was paid $1 million in 1960 or something, and that was considered an incredible, I mean, an astronomical amount of money for that time period. But now, you know, we're dealing with, I mean, you could talk about adjusted for inflation and what have you, but we're still a billion 50 years ago was still $1 billion. A billion is a billion is a billion. It's a whole different ball of wax now, gentlemen. Now, you know, the advent of the blockbuster is a totally different situation. You know, we could talk about the history of the blockbuster. I think, you know, it dates back perhaps to maybe the James Bond film. Some argue it might be the Planet of the Apes films. And then, of course, ultimately, you could get into Jaws or even to Star Wars. So, we you know, it's debatable as to what the time frame is for the blockbuster. But there's been this exponential climb in movie making as far as the focus on the quote-unquote blockbuster. And now we see that the blockbuster is it reigns supreme, and they have totally embraced it. And this summer is very indicative of this, and you can see just that. Really, I mean, when you think about what Comic-Con stands for, Comic-Con is really to announce blockbusters. It's a blockbuster festival. We've never seen anything. I mean, Cannes in France, it's not really for blockbusters. You know, not really. I mean, this is the place you go to. This is a pop cultural event, and that's something that the captain has talked about. And I think myself, and maybe speaking for Daryl, we've had to, as nerds and geeks, to adjust to the fact that this is the new world order, that the comic conventions are more pop cultural events than they are about truly comic book events. You know, you may have to go somewhere else for that, theoretically. All right, listen, let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove. When we get back, we're going to talk about Justice League Flashpoint Paradox, which is coming up next week as a DVD release, of course, through certain means that will be left unsaid. I was able to check out the movie as well as Daryl B. So we'll talk about our thoughts about this event comic from last year, or maybe 2 years ago now, that is now being released in animated DVD form. So we'll talk about that in a few moments. I played this last week. We'll play it again. This is Happy by Pharrell Williams from the Despicable Me 2 soundtrack, which the movie is kicking ass even as we speak. We'll be right back. Pharrell Williams, Happy.
Clap along.
Okay, folks, we're just about at the midway point. This is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio. This is the Comic Shop. We are open for business, the business of discourse. That was the chief architect of the NERD movement himself, Mr. Pharrell Williams, and that's Happy from the Despicable Me 2 soundtrack. Folks, feel free to jump on in. The water is warm. We're talking about pop, pop cultural stuff. The more fiery fare is not up yet, not until 7 o'clock, of course. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. You know, quickly, gentlemen, I want to mention something just as an anecdotal thing before we get into the whole Justice League Flashpoint Paradox DVD. I got to make a correction on something. That's something that just internally I want to mention to our audience. Last week I mentioned two things, actually. One thing was the Fearless Defenders comic book by Marvel that has an all-female lineup. I just got issues 1 through 6. I'm on issue number 5, and I'm loving it. It's very – I don't know what Daryl thinks about it, but it's very Buffy-esque, and it's very cinematic. That's another thing we may have to talk about maybe the next show, about just how many people are sneaking in, I guess, their film ideas in comic books. Because the comic books from – 30 years ago didn't necessarily feel like films to me. It's now where they're coming across the pacing, the banter. It just seems like people are trying to opt for movies out of these things, which makes for great writing as far as a comic book, but it makes it larger than a comic book. And also the fact that not everything is about, especially nowadays, not everything is about superheroes. I mean, half the stuff that's in the comic book store now are just stories. Stories that are getting optioned for movies. But anyway, I'm reading Fearless Defenders. And, you know, we talked about this minority character, a lesbian character that meets her demise. At least we're led to believe she met her demise in issue 6. And it caused folks to really have a problem. You know, the fan base will really come out when protected classes and comic books get taken out. You know, when Green Lantern... the Black Green Lantern, that is, John Stewart, when they were hinting at getting rid of him, and I think a writer actually walked off because of that. It causes a problem because we have so few minority representations in comic books, and they do pull that crap. The few that we have, they will kill them off. So, but the fact that it's a lesbian thing, you know. This is where my reptilian brain takes over. I'm like, wow, that's kind of hot. I have to say, you know, but I'm just putting it out there. so I'm enjoying Fearless Defenders, pick it up 1 through 6. Darren, what are your thoughts on Fearless? I mean, it's pretty cool, I think. The writing.
I told you guys. I love the book. I love the book. And the people that were getting mad about it never read the book. Because what I said was, hey, if you read 1 through 5, before you even pick it up 6, they stated early in the book that the death will be needed, all right? But Valkyrie never paid attention to that part. We read it. It is stated in 1. A death will be needed, okay? And then as it's going along, like I said, there's only 3 main characters whose death would affect the book. 3 characters. And when you're down to 3 and you're reading the book, it kind of becomes obvious. But the thing is, and this is a testament to Cullen Bunn, all right? I've been repping him since I read The Fearless. I've been repping him. He's one of the guys that's going to be in control of the Hunger / Infinity / Cataclysm projects I was telling you guys about. All right, he's a hot writer. He knows how to write this stuff, okay? And he gets you emotionally attached to the characters when you're reading it. And it's like I tell people for years, the only difference between comic books and novels is pictures, because they're both instruments to tell stories. They're both. You either get a good one or you get a bad one. Or, well, you can get okay ones, but if it's just okay, you put it down. You don't get worked up about it. You don't get passionate about it. It doesn't elicit a response from you. All right? So, in that way, all right, the people protesting, okay, it elicited a response from you. But if you read the book, you kind of know what's going to happen. You know what it is? It's comic book newbies. But it is comic books. He can always come back. And especially we're dealing with Valkyries. We're dealing with Shield Maidens and Doom Maidens. We're dealing with that grand manipulator, Odin. He can come back in some form or fashion. Back to you, Afternoon.
I see that coming down the pipeline, man, because it does seem a little bit – well, first of all, where's the Wonder Woman reference thing there, Daryl? You know, that whole – yeah, I mean, when I'm reading it, I get a little chill of this is Marvel channeling Wonder Woman. What's up with that?
Well, Eric, if you read the Incredible Hercules storyline, from a few years back following World War Hulk, you know, Hercules had a storyline. They introduced their own Themyscira. They introduced their own race of Amazons. And this Hippolyta was the one leading them at the time before she died. And Hela, you know, to her sneaky wit, resurrects her to be on this team. So, hey, it's not a shot across the bow at DC, but... hey, we got a Hercules. Hey, you just used a Hercules. Hey, you know what? We got Amazons, too. We can use a Hippolyta. That. Now, if she has a daughter named Diana, then it's a definite shot across the bow at DC.
That's what I'm waiting for. Because right now, you know, she says she doesn't like to be called Warrior Woman. And just the whole... When I saw Themyscira mentioned in a Marvel book, okay, what's going on? And it's the whole thing. It's very much a shout out at the mythology of Wonder Woman. Now, one other thing I want to mention, and then we're going to go to the Paradox DVD. This is something that happened to me while I was reading a comic book. I was critiquing the comic as I was reading it, and then I had to shut my mouth. I was reading Young Avengers. For those listening, of course, you can imagine Young Avengers, I guess, is an analog to, like, the Teen Titans. Just as the Teen Titans is the youthful, you can interpret it as a youthful version of the JLA on the DC side, Young Avengers would be the same for the Avengers on the Marvel side. So I'm reading this comic, and I remember that this is probably the second or third iteration of the Young Avengers. The first time that they brought the Young Avengers out, I thought it was more of a multiracial team, men and women. They even had the gay thing there, a gay couple in there. They had everybody represented. This iteration, I was reading, I said, okay, I don't really see enough. I think there's a Latina who's Miss America. Is that correct?
A Latina trans-dimensional being. I won't even get any farther than that. But, yes, her name is America. So appropriately, she's Miss America.
So I'm reading this thing, and I'm grumbling about it. I was thinking about not picking it up again because I was saying to myself, I'm tired of – sometimes I'm very much like the captain, where I get into these fits of I don't want to see another square-jawed white person helming a book. And this is not to be lambasting our white listeners, but it's about I want to see everybody represented. I just do, you know. And I'm thinking that there's some stuff coming out of Comic-Con that's interesting about that. And I'll mention that after we speak about the Paradox thing, something that Brian Michael Bendis said, and he is to be commended. I got to talk about that later on. But I'm reading the book, and okay, I see a Latina. That's cool. But the first book had Patriot, who is a direct descendant of Isaiah Bradley, who is the first Captain America who happens to be black. So you have essentially a black super soldier, a young black super soldier, in the first iteration of Young Avengers. I didn't see him in this issue until later on. So I didn't see him. So I'm a little frustrated. I see Loki as a young Loki. Loki's a teenager now. So I'm seeing all this, and I'm seeing 90210 at first. That's how my feelings are. But as I'm reading it, we have a character called Prodigy that makes an appearance, and Prodigy is a young black male whose power deals with intellect. His ability to actually siphon the intellect of other beings. So you can imagine if he was in a room with the Black Panther, with Mr. Fantastic, with Professor X, he would be able to siphon off all of their intellect, all of their knowledge. Listen, any interpretation of a black youth with cognition on a mutant level intrigues me. As the audience knows me by now, I just love it.
One of the problems I had with the X universe is he played a major part in the new X-Men Academy, but in recent years he was shuffled to the back. They stripped him of his power. He retains all the knowledge he had, but they stripped him of his power and they essentially pushed him into the background. Yeah, be a good black boy. Stand to the back. That's one of the major problems I have with the X universe. Back to you.
Yeah, so I just had this little thing that made me chuckle to myself. Where I'm endeared to the book now. So you have this young character, and then you see the that the Patriot character is soon to come. So now, okay, we're seeing that the book is starting to colorize, which is great. In the middle of the book, but there's a little joke that's in this book that caught me off guard. Daryl, if you remember, there's a book where now Loki is from Asgard, mind you.
Yep.
And you know that from the film, so listening audience. Loki is from Asgard. There's a character, what is that the character's name, Daryl? The one that's based on Captain Marvel.
The guy that was the protector, he's Novar now.
Right. All right. Mind you, the black character that, you know, he is high intellect, what have you. And he joins the group in a diner because he deduced that at some point these guys are going to come back at this diner. He just waited for them there because of his intellect. And he's able to predict things. He's able to read you. So there's a point where they leave the diner and you thought that Loki levied a pejorative against the black character. He says, okay, where do we go from here, Mr. Young Gifted in Black? And let me repeat that. This is what Loki from Asgard tells the black character, okay, what's up next, Mr. Young Gifted in Black? Now, for those who are not familiar with the term, Young Gifted in Black is one of is a terrific tune. It's a standard by Nina Simone, right? Nina Simone, great. The movie's coming out. Zoe Saldana is playing her. So you know what I'm talking about. This is in a comic book, ladies and gentlemen. So I don't think it was Prodigy himself or somebody else. They say you know about Nina Simone. Nina Simone in Asgard, and then the alien, an alien guy from off Earth says, "I'm an alien and I know about Nina Simone." So I couldn't help. I just had like, wow, this is what comics is supposed about. This is why I'm a nerd, and this is why imagery is so important for everybody, for the characters to joke about Nina Simone in a comic book that's supposed to be read by kids. Is big. I know it's just a little thing. It's a little thing. But you can Google this, and there's people talking about it. Google Nina Simone, Young Avengers, Young Gifted in Black. It's a comical exchange. It's a comical exchange, but to me, it's big. It's big and funny. That Nina Simone is so profound that someone from Asgard and an alien know of her. Daryl?
Give the writer credit. Oh, man. Mr. McKelvey, give him credit. He's had, in each issue, he's had an overt musical reference that if you're 15, 16 years old, you may not know the performer, but the reference and the thing will have you looking for it. So in a way, he's helping out the youth musical knowledge here with some of the stuff thrown in. And he laid the groundwork for this in issue one by showing Hawkeye, Kate Bishop, hanging out with Novar on his spaceship, and he has an extensive 60s music collection up there. So he laid the groundwork for this. So expect more musical references all throughout Young Avengers.
It also debunks debunks the notion of comic books really being a notion of infantilism. It's really not kid stuff anymore. It's really a sneaky way, a very subversive way of educating you, and it's always been that way. And really, they've done this for many years, but now I think they've even mastered it to a higher level. All right, enough of me gushing over Nina Simone mentioned in a comic book. Justice League Flashpoint Paradox, ladies and gentlemen, to be released next week, based on an actual story arc on a world event, comic book event, crossover event in DC mythology that set up DC 52. If you're even those who are not even aware of comic books, DC 52 was mentioned in the newspaper. It was major news that there was going to be a change-up, a modernizing of DC's heroes to bring them into the new world. That's why you have Superman in a different costume and all that kind of stuff. All right. Darryl, what are your thoughts on this? You saw it. What are your thoughts about this DVD release?
Well, again, folks out there, you know me. I did not like Flashpoint whatsoever. I did not like the storyline. I did not, because I've dealt with the time travelers throughout DC for years, all right? Time travelers, I'm a fan of Booster Gold. I'm a fan of the Time Masters. I'm a fan of Kronos. And all they do is go through history and muck things up and stuff like that, okay? So the main premise of having Flash go back and save a family member, and in the process, the Flash family member saving this family member is the thing to totally change the Earth's history in terms of heroes, in terms of – think about your major heroes and think about some of the important parts of your life or parts of their lives, and – Flash saving one of his family members from a routine tragedy. I hate to say routine with that, but it's the DC universe, you know? It's not like he saved the family member from an exploding nuclear bomb or a solar flare, all right? It was a routine tragedy. Again, I apologize for saying it that way. And that be the event to totally change everything in DC was funny to me. I had to laugh because I considered that lazy storytelling, all right? That one event. It's like I wrote this to hell with the rest of DC history, to hell with other people that have this power in the past, all right? So there's my bias aside. My bias aside, the three reasons you should go and see this: the Batman of the Universe, won't reveal who he is if you haven't read it, but you need to see it. You know, he was the best thing out of that universe for me, along with the second best thing, Cyborg. This was the series that made Cyborg a main eventer, all right? And we knew Cyborg, Vic Stone, could be a main eventer already, all right? But this is the one that opened people's eyes that, oh, we should put him on a JLA team. Matter of fact, it's because of Flashpoint that you saw Cyborg in Justice League Doom. I firmly believe that as a part of the JLA. It's because of this storyline, even though it sucks to me. That, and three, the voice acting. The voice acting is on point, and you'll recognize some of the familiar DC, because it was like an all-star list of the people that worked on their other animation in the past, all right, with the voice actors. Again, I don't like the story, but they did a good job streamlining this for what would we say it was, like 80 minutes, 73 to 80 minutes this was? You know, they did a good job streamlining it. The bad, and I noted on the blog, I was totally wrong about the animation. In the one or two clips they showed before releasing this, all right, they showed the scene on the roof, and it looked like the Young Justice animators. And I was like, you know what? That would help the story. That would. If you sit down and go through this, oh, my God, the animation sucked. This was not the Young Justice animators. Folks, I'm sorry for misleading you on that one. I know beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but there are scenes where bodies are misshapen. There were scenes where faces were all wrong. It's like they rushed this through without proofing it. I'm sorry, that's just how I feel. Afternerd, back to you.
Yeah, we're going to agree on some things and disagree on other things, which is nothing new to our audience. I never really had a problem with the storyline as a print storyline. I never had a problem with it. I'm glad that there was at least a Flash-centric storyline. I mean, you see that there seemed to be so much of an emphasis on Batman and Superman that it could lead to the ruination. Well, actually, it's going to be a Batman-Superman movie, so, I mean, you know, I guess it makes sense. But it's Batman-Superman all the time, every time, especially when it comes down to the animated fare. And they have so many characters to discuss, or to show, I should say. I'm glad that they have a Flash, that they had a Flash story. I mean, the Flash story, I mean, as far as his story, his mythology, his rogues, there's a lot going on. It doesn't always have to be Batman, Superman, but even though they were in this anyway. But it was essentially Flash's story.
Uh-oh. Afro Nerd?
From the book?
Oh, there it is.
Lost
Hello?
You there. You got to repeat that. We lost you.
You,
okay.
We lost
what
you from after essentially his story.
Yeah, this is his story. And I thought that, isn't this a direct line from the print book? I mean, I didn't really see anything from my memory. I didn't see any, because most of the time our complaint is they have to change something. This seems to be almost like directly from the comic. Was there anything that actually changed in this, Daryl?
No, they streamlined the story well. I collected like 3/4 of Flashpoint. Most of the stuff I collected is in this movie. You know, it's pretty much the story streamlined down. My major gripe about it and why I didn't like it in book form is essentially you had so many guys with cosmic level powers that have traveled through time, and there have been no ill effects, all right? It Flash does it, saves a family member, and it totally changes the whole universe. What? Huh? That's where it didn't chime for me, you know? I mean, Booster, he would change something in the past. The present, a little change, okay? Kronos, all the time, change something in the past, little change. Flashpoint, Flash goes back and saves a non-powered member of his family, okay? Major change. Everything's changed. All of a sudden, Superman doesn't land where he is. All of a sudden, we got a new Batman. All of a sudden, we got Atlantis and the Themyscira at war, where they're wiping out whole continents. What? That's where I had a problem with it, all right? It makes no logical sense if you followed everything through. If you haven't followed everything through and you see it, you're going to assume this is a good story for you. But for me, it's a joke. It's once again freaking Jeff Johns doing on Brian Michael Bendis. Forget about everything you know before. This is my story to tell. Everything changes. If you're a comic nerd, how can you forget about everything that came before? Because your love of the medium comes from the nostalgia and the stories you read in the past. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I mean, it was my real chief complaint is really just the animation. The animation's crazy, as far as the changes in the storyline, time travel stories are always going to be that way, Daryl. I mean, haven't we always been told that if one were to go back to the prehistoric age, that if you stepped on a butterfly, it could change things? If you could step on a butterfly, I'm pretty sure if you could save a parent from death, that it might have deleterious, you know, ramifications.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just thinking.
But enough to send Superman's rocket ship as a baby crashing totally across the other end of the country? Really?
Well,
saving that family member affected the gravitational well that linked the wormhole between Krypton and Earth where that ship totally missed. Saving that family member had that power.
That's why they call it. It was a movie called what? The Butterfly Effect.
The most minute thing
could have chain reactions. We don't know. I mean, it's all mythology. But I'm just saying that time travel works, and it's not really something uncharted, Daryl, where something weird happens based on a small alteration.
I know, but it goes totally against the mythology that they have set in place before. I ran off the time travel characters before. Hell, you have Rip Hunter who monitors these things. He doesn't make an appearance to stop this. You know, that's why in the book form, I had a major problem with the storyline. Because DC went against their own canon that they set up. No one else set it up. DC set up their own canon. True stuff like Zero Hour. True stuff like The Crisis. Oh, pick your crisis. True, that stuff already. You already produced your own level of rules and foundations. And this book went totally against that. And not only just went totally against that, but it kicked over the whole table and it led to the New 52 where beloved characters of mine got killed off or forgotten or shuffled to the background for no rhyme and no reason. Back to you.
All right, listen, folks. We'll leave it up to you to decide ultimately to pick up this DVD. I didn't mind the storyline. I actually kind of like it because I'm a big Flash fan anyway. But as far as the animation, Daryl was correct. It's Beauty is an Eye of the Beholder. But to me, the animation was subpar. Really, but the story, for me, was adequate. But animation and story mean something together. When something is off, we got about 4 minutes remaining, folks. We're going to have to go to After Nerd Radio in a few moments. I do want to mention one thing. I was listening to Geek Time, which is a Sirius XM pop culture, comic book oriented radio show, and Ralph Sorella, which is, I guess, he's best known for being a compatriot of Howard Stern. It's his show. He's at San Diego Comic Con even as we speak, and he was interviewing legendary comic book writer Brian Michael Bendis. And there was a moment where Bendis talked about his encounter with a black fan who just really was highly congratulatory toward Bendis for his creation, his Spider-Man, Black Spider-Man, Miles Morales storyline. And it was interesting to hear this exchange on the show when he's explaining that, you know, first of all, the character is very popular, that folks are confessing that they want to know about Miles Morales. They're somewhat invested in his life. They're invested in his story, which, you know, on a number of occasions when a story gets colorized, the mainstream culture, they lose interest sometimes. In this instance, they're saying, hey, you know, this is a pretty cool take on Spider-Man, on a different Spider-Man. He happens to be black and Latino, an Afro-Latino. And I have to admit, I dig the story myself. And, it was interesting for them to really go on about this whole idea of expanding the palette of characterization in comic books. Now, we don't have enough time to talk about – we're going to talk about it next week. I want to talk about the same issue when it comes to downloadable content, downloadable characters, and really, as far as video gaming is concerned, Assassin's Creed, they have a black heroine that we didn't get a chance to talk about. So, I mean, we might have mentioned it before, but I want to talk about it again. Only 2 minutes, but shout out to Brian Michael Bendis for creating Miles Morales. Hopefully we'll see more characters of color coming to the fold. We can always hope, but I thought it was cool that these folks admitted, you know what? This Ultimate Spider-Man thing is kind of cool. Darryl, any closing thoughts? Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, on that same note, folks, if you did not pick up Ultimate Spider-Man 25 this week, pick it up. Trust me on this, or even read it. Go to, I think the pages are 18 and 19 in the back of the book. Just read that for a very important conversation that Miles Morales has with a forgotten character that we know and love from the Ultimate Peter Parker Mythos. Trust me on this. You need to see this conversation. Back to you.
Yeah, and also pick up Fearless Defenders, now at issue 6. Still early enough to pick up all these issues. And also Young Avengers. All right. Folks, it's been real. We're going next door to After the Radio. Daryl, you know, always important.
Stay cool.
Indestructible, Daryl B. And stay tuned. We got a lot more stuff to talk about for After the Radio. In a few moments, folks.
Spot with a beard?
I think not.
One, Rodney King should have got his head beat for driving drunk and being grown in a Hyundai.
Two, OJ did it.
Three, Rosa Parks ain't did nothing but sit her black tail down.
Hey, I'm going to back you up on that, because see, look, he was on the bus back in the day, and he on the bus now.
Eddie, not only is what you're saying not true, it's wrong and disrespectful for you to discuss Rosa Parks in that way.
Exactly.
Wait. Hold on here. Is this a barbershop? Is this a barbershop?
It's
a barbershop.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation. That's
yeah,
all right.
You got to tell Rosa Parks that.
There ain't nobody exempt in the barbershop. You know that. Ain't nobody exempt. You can talk about whoever and whatever, whenever you want to in the barbershop.
Why you got to tell Rosa Parks like this, Eddie? You know you're wrong. Keep on walking. You're wrong. You're walking by yourself this time, pal. I ain't with you. I'll tell you one thing. You better not never let Jesse Jackson hear you talking about that.
Man, Jesse Jackson.
We are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the East, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
This is the part two section of the show, folks. This is After the Radio. I want to thank Daryl B. for stopping by, of course, for the comic shop. As always, he's an important member of our team. And, folks, remember every Saturday we do our Grindhouse shows where we talk about pop and pulp for the first half. And, of course, we try to get into more serious fare, sometimes or oftentimes more serious fare for the second half of the show. Again, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, the call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. There's a lot to talk about in this hour, so we're going to be terse, just like the last show. We will attempt to be terse to really get into all these topics. We will probably talk a little bit more about the Zimmerman trial, the Zimmerman verdict, only as far as informational concerns are concerned. I don't know if that makes any sense, but you'll get where I'm coming from. We'll talk about it just for informational purposes, not so much about, I don't know, all the extraneous issues that really are spewing forth from this tragedy. I will say this, in introducing this next song, I did, by accident, look at the death photos of young Master Martin, and wow, I mean, to see a young man just laid out like that, you know, it is something. But I will say this much, I've said it before, just how many more bodies are like that for other circumstances, for still gun violence, that kind of thing. But this is the body that we see that has really enthralled the nation, so much so that the president had to speak out about that, and we'll talk about his speaking out about being profiled and that whole thing. But I never take death lightly, especially the deaths in Chicago, the deaths in Brownsville, the deaths in Oakland, that kind of thing. Black folks are dying all over the country in various cities, and Trayvon is one of 1,000. But still, very rough to look at. So, without further ado, this is Stand Your Ground by the great Pharoah Monch. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. Okay, folks, that's the latest from progressive hip-hop artist Pharaoh Monch, Stand Your Ground, undoubtedly based on the Stand Your Ground law that many states currently have on the books, and undoubtedly to connect to the tragedy of Trayvon Martin. All right, folks, this is Afternoon Radio, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Speaking of the captain, Captain, you're needed to stand your ground, I suspect, somewhere. Let's get to it, sir.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before. Charles Barkley. Let's get it started.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about him. I want to talk about Fruitvale Station at some point. I see Sergio, our friend from Chicago, is listening. So I guess at some point, if you'd like, you can come on in when we get to that topic. If we have enough time, we've been putting it off. But I know that, folks, again, check out Shadow and Act, courtesy of IndieWire, Shadow and Act, and excellent website that talks about filmmakers of color internationally, not just nationally, and it's far, far, far from a minstrel site. It's the antithesis of sites like Video Takeout and Boston, the antithesis. All right, Captain, first up, I guess we would be remiss without mentioning that POTUS, President of the United States, that he weighed in on this Trayvon Martin affair for the second time. Last year he said that if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin. Some folks looked at that as pandering. Other folks looked at it like, well, he's African American. Many in the African American community wanted some kind of shout out. They wanted some kind of appeal. So with this verdict, there was a call from a faction of the African American community that felt that he needs to say something. So I think begrudgingly, I don't think he wanted to talk about this, because what happens is, because of who he is and the fact that he's a Democrat, those on the right look at it as an opportunity to weigh in and to critique. And the critique is oftentimes biting, heavy, very rarely nuanced. And I say that as a conservative, but at the same time, I'm a black conservative. And listen, I'm going to be far more kinder than others, other conservatives, and even some black conservatives. I like President Obama, but I always felt that his was a symbolic win. I'm not so keen about looking at politics as the saving grace of black people as a general topic. I think, and we've mentioned this before, Dr. Thomas Sowell, noted conservative educator, he has said, I need to get that clip at some point. He said rather bluntly in an interview with Tony Brown that there hasn't really been, there's nothing in the historical record that shows that a people have been successfully able to rise, especially economically, through politics. It just doesn't happen. But I think black folks still, at least if you give the impression, we still feel that we can succeed through politics. You know, and there's no evidence of that. So I'm on that tip. But I do admire the president, because it is a symbolic win, and it dies down, or I shouldn't say dies down, it affects the criticism or the belief that you can't do anything. That was always the hallmark position, that you could be a lot of things, but you could never be president. Now you're going to have to step back from that. We've been to the moon, and we've been to the White House. So the excuses, to me, are wearing thin. Just for that alone. Forget about his politics. I'm talking about his positioning. Anyway, he weighed in on this affair. The Young Turks from the internet, they discussed this as well. So I'm going to pull a clip from them where they talk about this historic discussion on the part of the president about his personal dealings with being profiled. So many feel that this is big for a president of color to say, hey, I could have been Trayvon 35 years ago. So I don't know about that. I don't know about that. This is where I escape the plantation thinking. I figure out a way to dismantle my chains, and I'm running away. So let's listen to the fine Young Turks for a moment, the Young Turks, I should say, and then we will unpack. Hold on. This is the Young Turks and Obama, and he is Trayvon. Hold on.
President Barack Obama had a press briefing earlier today to give his reaction to the acquittal of George Zimmerman. We're going to get to a lot of different quotes, but first we've got video. Let's watch.
When Trayvon Martin was first shot, I said that this could have been my son. Another way of saying that is Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago. And when you think about why, in the African-American community at least, there's a lot of pain around what happened here, I think it's important to recognize that the African-American community is looking at this issue through a set of experiences and a history that that doesn't go away. There are very few African-American men in this country who haven't had the experience of being followed when they were shopping in a department store. That includes me. There are very few African-American men who haven't had the experience of walking across the street and hearing the locks click on the doors of cars. That happens to me, at least before I was a senator. There are very few African-Americans who haven't had the experience of getting on an elevator and a woman clutching her purse nervously and holding her breath until she had a chance to get off. That happens often. And you know, I don't want to exaggerate this, but those sets of experiences inform how the African-American community interprets what happened one night in Florida.
I thought this was one of his bravest speeches in office and in a long time. I was actually surprised by it because he actually honestly talked about race in a way that I thought at this point in his presidency he would be afraid to. I'm being honest about how I feel about President Obama, et cetera. He did an amazing speech about race back when he was running for office in 2008, but ever since he's been in office, he's been so cowed by what the right wing has said that I thought if he did a speech like this and he talked about his African-American experience and that racism actually exists, that his advisors would be like, are you nuts? Yeah. Do you know what Fox News is going to say? They're going to say you're riling up racial hatreds and you're, what they say about Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, you're a race hustler, you're a pimp, you're this, you're that. And apparently, no, this is something that moves him, and he's, decided to do this anyway.
Well, but they probably will still say that. I mean, the reaction from Twitter already is just a fire with conservatives attacking him, saying he's the first racist in chief and stuff like that he's race baiting, that he's trying to start riots and things like that. I mean, you have to have a pretty twisted mind to see that speech and think that he's encouraging people to, like, burn down buildings and murder people. But yeah, I think that this is one of the areas where Barack Obama is, this is one of the empathy, the compassion, this is what he's good at. And the fact that he can speak directly to the conversation that's going on right now in Black America, partially because the NSA has been listening directly to that conversation. But I think that's one area where he gets it right.
Yeah, and also that it was there's a lot of things to learn from this. Among them is that we did a segment today on TYT Sports about the tweets in reaction to Mark Anthony singing the God Bless America at the All-Star Game and Yoenis Cespedes winning the Home Run Derby and doing his interview afterwards in Spanish, because that's his language. And so Twitter you know, as Twitter has been this great breakthrough, and we may have made progress, but Twitter makes it seem like we've made very little progress.
Because you have to see the idiots.
Right.
Okay, folks, I'm going to stop there because it's a rather lengthy clip, and we have a lot to get into. I want to give the floor to the great captain to give his impressions of President Obama weighing in the way that he did about his own personal dealings with being racially profiled. And I'm a little bit – my opinion is very nuanced on this. Now, I'm not really 100% with it, and I'm not 100% against it. So, Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, first, his choice of words were impeccable, and the way he delivered it was very wise in that manner. That's the first thing. The second thing is we also have to understand he's going to be out of there very soon, meaning which he's not going to be able to do another term as the president. So now you can pull, if you want to, I'm president. So I'm going to say what I want to say, but I'll be very wise with what I'm saying. Forget about what Fox News or anybody else is going to say. I am the president. This is my last term. That's one. That's two, should I say. Now, the things he said, a lot of those were my own experiences, except for the fact of me being Trayvon at 17. 17, chances are that would not have been me at 17. But all of those other experiences I have went through. Going in the elevator, that's very true. I'm not a thug. I'm not a person. And it's happened at times when I had a suit on. Walking past cars, people locking cars. That's a real black man experience. People have experienced, regardless of how they look, regardless of educational level, regardless of the way you speak. That's very real. So I thought that was very profound. In 2013. But once again, as I said before, the reason why Mr. Trayvon, or should I say Mr. Zimmerman, excuse me for that, Mr. Zimmerman, did not get convicted was that the evidence, there wasn't enough evidence there the way it was presented. And if you can raise a shadow of a doubt, you will walk, especially when you're dealing with the state. The federal situation is a whole different ball game they do not play. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Rappler.
Yeah, we have a caller. I'm gonna open up the lines and get to the caller in a moment. Again, folks, feel free to buzz on in, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. We're talking about President Obama weighing in on the Zimmerman verdict. And as I said, I suspect that there was a large – outcry coming from the black community or from a segment of the black community that pretty much was putting him in a position where, listen, you're going to have to say something. We want you to comment on this. My problem is that I think, this was more – listen, just as the captain said, he is masterful as far as being an orator, probably one of the greatest orators of our time, undoubtedly. However, he's also a masterful politician, and this was about politics – and making people, going back to my Halle Berry reference, making them feel good, make me feel good, make me feel good. I don't need President Obama to necessarily make me feel good. I will acknowledge that I have been racially profiled. I have. In my past, yes. Maybe even to this day, unbeknownst to me, it might be occurring. You never know all the time. But I also know that there's a bit of scrutiny. Things have progressed to such a point or regress to such a point where you can almost understand the other side for having to profile you. Now, I'm not into exclusionary – now, hear my words very carefully, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not into exclusionary racial profiling. But race, among other descriptors, should be taken into account. Now, we might have mentioned before, there's a councilman in Brooklyn, because we're broadcasting from New York, Jumani, I think his name is. His full name escapes me. But he wants there to be no mentioning of race or gender, which would cripple the police. So if a crime is occurring, you have to say what he's wearing, but you can't say – you really can't give an appropriate descriptor. And that's just being a lunatic. That's being politically correct. And this is, things are too serious to employ political correctness at this time. But, you know, hey, that's the other side of the racial profiling thing. You just can't be a black or brown person and then that's the end of it. I think I'm more amenable to profiling when it's one of a number of different things. Black, you're black, you're of a certain age, you're dressed a certain manner, your mannerisms, what you are in the act of doing, where you're located. There's a whole bunch of things going on. The conservatives are being disingenuous, and they're also being equally political. We see that Sean Hannity has weighed in, and he said that, well, he's probably finding a kinship with Trayvon because they both smoke pot. And is it because the president snorted coke as a youthful indiscretion? So he went, you know, that's not what the man was talking about. He's talking about specifically a racial profiling experience or experiences. He goes to, well, they're both potheads. That's why. You're being disingenuous, Mr. Hannity. You're being a phony, and you're doing a non sequitur thing. The Fox Network, they're all about non sequiturs, just trying to connect things that don't connect. And people gobble this stuff up. Oh, he's the racist in chief. Really? Really? This is why being the Afro nerd and the captain, it's a burden. Because we know too much. We know the historical record, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm saying this as a conservative. I'm not a conservative to the point of being an ideologue where I can't call out people. I call out everybody. Woodrow Wilson professed, and Sergio knows this, Sergio Mims, Woodrow Wilson professed his love for the overtly racist movie, The Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffith's 1959, The Birth of a Nation, which is basically a Klan, the Ku Klux Klan as a hero movie. They were the superheroes. They were the Men of Steel of their day. And he showed this movie in the White House as a sitting president. And he lauded over the filmmaking, I should say the film itself, lauded over its importance. He loved The Birth of a Nation as a sitting president and actually had it shown in the White House. But you're going to call the first black president, you're going to call the black guy the racist guy, but you had Woodrow Wilson professing his fondness for The Birth of a Nation. Come on. Cut it out. Knock it off. But there's nobody out there that's really pulling these guys to the carpet. You pull them to the carpet, you talk to them in their face, you confront them, and you give them facts, then they will go away. Just as I've said about the lower tier shenanigans and people who try to profess ghetto-centric paradigms, you just like you if you were to, in movie fare, movie lore, when you pull out the crucifix and you put it on the forehead of the vampire, they start to hiss and they start to melt and go away. You give people the truth, unfettered truth that they cannot deconstruct, they go away. But no one's doing that. No one is doing that. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's get some more opinions on this thing. The president speaks out about the Trayvon Martin tragedy, the Zimmerman verdict. Also, just dovetailing off the captain, someone as erudite and as refined as the president with a high degree of cognition would have had a different comportment than young Master Martin when confronted with Zimmerman, if we're going to be honest. If we're going to be honest. Now, black folk, I got to get on you now. This is going back from the last show. You can't skip from the man coming out of his car to he took his gun out and shot him with an iced tea in his hand. There was an altercation. If you have a certain cognitive ability and you can extricate yourself out of the altercation, it would not have happened. But for some reason, folks don't want to get rid of it. They don't want to talk about that because it doesn't fit the narrative. But it is the truth, and you cannot deconstruct it. Sorry. 415, AfroNerd, tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
Hey, D-Bird, Captain, it's your boy Ja. How's it going, fellas?
Pretty good, man. How you feel?
Good.
Good, good, man. I just felt compelled to call because this is gonna get a lot of things off my chest. Try to come with the hot fire, you know. Because this, listen, I'm with you guys when you talk about Obama. I'm indifferent to it. Like, I appreciate that he did come up there and make a statement, but at the same time, I felt like it was just underwhelming of what he could have said. I understand he's the president of the United States. He has to represent everybody, all that. But in a historical sense, I believe that he could have done something to maybe wake some people up on both sides. So maybe he could have said, hey, white people, you know, stop valuing your skin over your interests. People, all people of all colors, everybody is in the same boat. And because you're white doesn't mean that you're different than somebody else. We're all in the same boat. We're all dealing with economic disparity. For black people, stop buying into the memes. Stop buying into this. Yes, we understand. I've been through it. We've all been through this whole profiling and just and it gets tiring. I'm tired of it. All this negative perceptions of us is really, really just it's some BS that we have to deal with. But at the same time, if we still buy into that BS and just go along with it, and we're not getting anywhere. So I think Obama, when he said some of those things, some typical memes, I think that people are going to use that as like saying, like, yeah, you're right, you know, this is going to happen, blah, blah, blah. But then you're going to still keep on going and buying into that and still continue the just that perception of us and buy into what the media is how they're perceiving us. I've said before that we have to control how we perceive, and to do that, we can't buy into these memes of us being these thugs and everything and what they say, what they have on the music and the TV and things like that. There has to be a black enlightenment of our minds before anything can change. So you can keep doing the protesting, you could keep trying to change laws, whatever, but until we get our money together, until we get our minds together to come together and say, hey, we need to infiltrate the game and just flip it for ourselves, because we could protest till we blew in the mouth. But that's not gonna change anything, because you're still gonna keep on killing each other. In New Orleans last week, a little 5-year-old girl was raped and murdered by somebody of her own kind. Okay, we need to protest that, because we need to stop. We need to stamp out the bad apple out of our community so we can progress and be vital members of this society. Because bottom line, if we want to get where we want to get, we have to adapt, and to adapt that means just stop killing each other and coming together.
John, let me tell you something, because we got time constraints, but I like what you said. I just want to put a caveat to what you're talking about. And again, listen, I'm not going to take anything from what you're saying, because what you're saying is a lot of truth in it. You're listening to this show for a reason. But see, I'm all about the nuance now. And when Trayvon was killed and killed tragically, and I'll tell you, when I saw his death photos, I'm being completely candid. It hurts. It hurts when when you see a young man with his eyes open, lifeless. It's a harrowing out ordeal, just as someone looking at it on a computer. But at the same time, he's one of a legion of black bodies just laying out as if they're, you know, when a lifeless body in that manner is not in some kind of cathedral with thousands of people looking on like Michael Jackson. You know, it's you're not looked at. You're not ascended to godhood like that. You're on the grass, dead like some animal. And I don't know why we aren't affected. See, we're talking about white people, what they need to do, and they don't feel anything. We don't feel anything. I mean, all these rappers, everyone's coming out because of the media manipulation on this one event. But this event is just a minuscule. It's a hair on the ass of a pig compared to all the other deaths that occur even as we speak. When you talk about this little girl, there was a young woman, I think 16, they're calling her a prostitute of color They're calling her that. I don't know if that's correct. But there were a group of young men who were attempting to engage in some kind of sexual thing with her. She rescinded the offer. Again, she's 16, but it wouldn't matter how old she was. And they threw her off of a roof in Brooklyn, a young woman. Now she is barely alive. She's in a body cast. So if there's some kind of sexual pact or whatever it was on a minor, she rescinded, and they threw her off of a roof, and you see a picture of a black young male doing it, or I should say a picture of a black young perp. Now, listen, we ask for discernment. We're all not like that. That's a small fragment of the population. But as you said, it's a meme that we have to talk. We have to start to address. When we talk about the hooded, those who wear hoods, and everyone's wearing hoods because it's symbolism. And you know, why can't I wear a hood? And we know that Mark Zuckerberg can wear a hood. Knock it off. Because a white person in a hood like Zuckerberg is not the meme of urban criminality. It's not the meme. Why aren't black folks talking about the police blotter that the captain looks at, that I look at? The police blotter, when they show pictures of just indiscriminate criminality, shows a black or brown male with a hood, with a hoodie, committing a crime. That still photograph is always somebody in a hood, and yet we're supposed to ignore that that's not a reality. So unfortunately, the black reality is maybe if you're a young male, a young black male, maybe you might not want to wear a hood. I tell you right now, I don't run. Like I think of myself as half physically fit. Sometimes I just want to run. I said to myself recently, I don't run outside unless I'm jogging. Like it was obvious I'm jogging. But just to run, if you feel like just running, I'm not going to run. Because we know a black male running, where are you running from? I'm not going to die because of this perception. I'm not going to die. Some people want to die for the hoodie. I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. God, as always, man, thank you. I'm going to go to another call. Let's go to another call. 626, welcome to Afternoon Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, your thoughts.
Hey, what's going on, brother? It's Covina Man from California.
Covina, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, I'd like to add in. I think that Obama or whatever he has is ups and his downs. I just think that on the issue of race, he's not one of the most. He's not. That's not his strong point. Talking about race, I think, and I just think that with black folks, we've been discussing race with. White folks or anti-black people, since the Donahue days on TV that I can remember. So I come to the conclusion that we shouldn't even talk to these, Fox News or Rush Limbaugh people about race. There is no point in the conversation. The only thing that they get out of it is three things. This is the three things they get out of having a conversation about race with us. One, it pacifies them until they annihilate you, or two, it pacifies them until they annihilate you, or three, it pacifies until they annihilate you. That's the only thing that they get out of it. They sit there and they, talk a day or two or whatever, and then meanwhile, the cop kills somebody and get away with it. Now civilians killing somebody and get away with it, or they're passing some laws and trying to get rid of your teachers, get rid of your health care. Getting rid of this, that, and the other. That's the only person that is pacifying you. Why are we sitting around? The only dialogue we really need to have is a dialogue with people who are victims of racism and figure out what we're going to do about it. So keep trying to figure out, trying to get the other people to change their mind. They're not changing their mind. This is about self-preservation of white privilege. That's what America or basically conservatism is all about, conserving white privilege, and it's, what kind of conversation can we have about that?
Well, listen, you're not going to want to hear this from me, but I don't know how much race talk you really want to have. How much race talk is necessary when we're not living? You're not living with your grandfather's form of racism. I'm not living with the Oracle's form of racism. The Oracle can tell you of having to go to a movie theater and sitting in the balcony because that's the black section. I never had to deal with separate and unequal. You know, I'm Generation X. You know, Generation X and now Generation Y, and Generation Y, really, they're completely oblivious of what those before them had to deal with. So I'm not so sure if it's all – I mean, listen, we understand racism exists, but we have to be able – we are not prepared to deal with it. And we're not going to be able to deal with the racism if we're dead, if we're killing each other and we're raping each other and we're profiting off of this minstrel industry that is repeated failure. The industry is a type of entertainment that deals with black failure. People are entertained with black failure. Think about that. So it's a little deeper. Maybe that's part of the racial element, but I feel that we have to deal with babies. Can we stop shooting babies in carriages? Because that's what's going on in black neighborhoods where there's no black man around. There's no black Knight Riders, Kavina. See, our parents had to deal with the Knight, and our grandparents had to deal with Knight Riders coming into your house, pulling you from your bedroom, hanging you. You go down south. The whole notion of strange fruit. We never had to deal with that. Now you might have to deal with the Bloods and the Crips coming in your house and stringing you up. We're not dealing with that. I don't want to hear about racism until we deal with that. We got to deal with this crime. We have to deal with this stop snitching stuff. When people come to me and tell me, well, George Zimmerman got away with murder. Well, there's a whole crew of people that get away with murder all the time, and you don't rat them out because you have a sixth sense of the omerta or stop snitching. The Italians had their version of stop snitching, but it was for those who were involved in the crime. Now, if you are a victim of the crime, you can't tell anybody. That's not about racism, man.
My thing is that might be true in that, but that's a separate issue. It's like we can't talk about football and baseball at the same time. We only can talk about one sport. Can we talk about black-on-black crime, so-called, you know, get to the source of that? And can we also talk about institutions of racism in our country? It's like, can we not have both conversations? I think a lot of people are so afraid to tackle the racism that they say, okay, we can't handle that. I may not get pat on the back if I do, so let me focus on the dudes over here on the bottom. I can't talk about the top 10% or 3% because they got the power, they control everything, so I'll go over here and talk about the people who ain't got a GED. It's a lot easier to pick on the people who ain't got a GED. We can spit on them, don't nobody say nothing, but we can't raise an eyebrow at the people who are on top of controlling stuff. That's what we're afraid of.
Well, listen, we only have about 20 minutes remaining, Kavina, so we're going to have to pick this up for another show. We want to move ahead. We're going to go to a quick musical break. As always, man, we appreciate it. We agree to disagree. Well, you know, I'm not disagreeing with you, but we can pat our heads and rub our stomachs, I think. So I agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
As always, man. Appreciate it.
All right, bro.
All right, listen, ladies. All right,
have a good one.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's go to a quick musical groove. When we get back, let's see if we can have the great Sergio Mims come on in to discuss Fruitvale Station and other trailers. There's other movies. 12 Years a Slave is highly intriguing to me. Actually, I would prefer to see that than another. I'm sorry?
That looks like a good one. That looks like more hours to see.
Yes. Yes. A man of intellect that was born free, that is brought back into slavery, but he's born a free man and then captured as a slave. So that is the story that scares me. I don't care about Fruitvale Station per se. Personally, more poverty porn, and just my opinion. They'll give that an Oscar.
We'll
see what happens with 12 Years a Slave. 12 Years a Slave, they'll say, well, I really can't relate to that. All right, a quick groove, and then we'll be back with Mr. Sergio Mims discussing Shadow and Act and some of these films. This is new from Janelle Monáe. Dance Apocalyptic. Give you the best of urban alternative groove, folks. We'll be right back.
dance apocalyptic, bands that make Kirk dance apocalyptic now, bands that make Kirk dance apocalyptic, bands that make Kirk dance apocalyptic now, bands that make Kirk dance apocalyptic.
I will confess, ladies and gentlemen, that I find Janelle Monáe extremely attractive. I just do. She's cute as a button, and she's not into a whole bunch of histrionics. She can throw down. I just don't think she's going to get her due. I think when you're really good, I saw a performance of hers. I didn't see the BET Awards because I can't look at minstrel programming. But I did see a clip on YouTube of Erykah Badu and Ms. Monáe really lighting up the stage. And I said, okay, that's a real talent. But there was a fight. I think Prince had to intervene to have her on the show because she goes against type. This is what I'm talking about in the last segment. We're not allowed to disengage ourselves from the minstrelsy. The Asian folk, the Indian folk, they're not talking about affirmative action because they're passing tests. Their culture dictates that they are here to succeed. We have to start incorporating some of what they're doing. And then we'll talk about this racism thing. I'm not saying racism doesn't exist, but we got to deal with the cultural stuff, nigga versus nigger, your girl shouting out Rachel Jontel. She put that on the map. We're not talking about the minstrelsy. We're not talking about the industry of minstrelsy. We're not talking about the crime. We're talking about 1960s racism. I'm sorry, folks. You're not going to get me on that. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but we have a lot of other things that's preventing us from moving forward. All right. Enough of my soapbox moment. Folks, this is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. We got about 12 minutes remaining. Let's just bring in friend of the show, noted film critic from Chicago, also most noted for now being affiliated with a very popular website, Shadow and Act, Sergio Mims. Serge, what's up?
Hello, everyone. How are you doing?
All right, all right, all right.
Listen, Serge, we've been putting this off for a moment because stuff has just been happening. The verdict came through. Black folks want to talk about, you know, this tragedy. Let's try to uplift some things. Well, there's another tragedy on screen, so I tried. Talk about this. You mentioned before, let's revisit this Fruitvale Station. I don't want to see this film. Oscar Grant's tragedy out there in the West Coast. You wrote about this. What's going on with Fruitvale Station?
Before I tell you that, I do want to correct one thing. You talked about Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
There's a story that Woodrow Wilson saw the movie, and he called it, was history written by lightning, Birth of a Nation. That's not true. He did see the film at the White House, but there's no evidence at all that he actually said that. That's most likely a story made up by D.W. Griffith, who told a lot of lies about himself and his movies. I'm sure Griffith liked the movie. He did write a letter to Griffin telling him that he liked the film and he thanked him for screening at the White House. But the whole story about him going up and exclaiming, it's like history being written by lightning, that's not true.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that controversy, but listen, for a sitting president to say he liked a racist movie and to show it at the White House, and I'm putting it out there to compare that with President Obama. President Obama is the racist in chief. There's no comparison. That's all.
I'm not disputing it. Well, Fox has to say something, of course, because that's their stock and trade. And as someone said recently, the guy who runs Fox, Roger Ailes, he knows already that the Republicans are going to lose in 2016. So he's got to keep this thing going to get viewers. Anyway, let's talk about Fruitvale Station. It's okay. I don't think it's all that. A lot of people are raving about it. I put it to you this way. I realize that there are three types of black movies, three types of black films. There are black films that are made for everyone, like Spike Lee films. They're basically made for everyone. Black rom-coms, they're usually seen mainly by black people, but they're basically made for everyone. Then there are black films that are made exclusively for black people, Daughters of the Dust. Many independently made black films. Tyler Perry movies are really made for black people. They're not made for white people. Then there are black films that are made for white people, like Precious, like The Butler, which is coming out, and Fruitvale Station. It's not really made for black people. It's really made for white people to, in effect, say, gee, don't you care about us now? That's really what's coming on here. I interviewed the director. He's a very interesting guy. He's very, very intense. He's very sincere in what he believes in. But when you see the film, there's nothing really there you haven't seen already or don't know about already. There really isn't. As a matter of fact, I would argue you learn less. You really don't learn anything about Oscar Grant except that he had a really serious anger management issue. I don't mean minor. I mean serious. At times, he has to be physically restrained. Number two, he was a good father. Okay, a lot of black men are. But what else? Now, I compared it to a film like Menace to Society, which the movie shows you why these guys are the way they do. It's because of family structure or lack of one. It's because the situation that environment that they live in. It's because they're sociopaths. There's nothing like that in Fruitvale Station. I find him a cipher by the end of the film. So then at the end of the film, when he's shot to death, and actually that's where the film ends, when he's shot and dies. I thought the film was going to go on beyond that, but it doesn't. At the end, I didn't really feel anything because I still really didn't get to know him.
Well, listen, sir, you know, my thing, we were supposed to talk about this, I guess, 2 weeks ago, because I thought that this is just one of a number of films that seemed to really the critical elite, that they become very enamored with this kind of film, this, as they call it, poverty porn, and it seems to be very thematic in black filmmaking. That when they put these kind of films out there, white folks, the white establishment seems to just love them. That they really get a sense of black culture, and you know the exoticism of blackness, and it's always rooted in just failure and death and poverty. And black males having problems. I mean, you know, not that we don't see enough of this on the 6 o'clock news, but now, and not to say this wasn't a tragedy, but at the same time, why is it all of a sudden it's worthy of Oscar consideration? That if there's something else where it's different, we get no acknowledgement. It's always this.
Well, you said
it's
it.
Always
you
this.
Actually said it. You said it. This is a movie so white people can go and say, now I know what it's like to be a black man now that I have seen Fruitvale Station. You know, it's a Sundance movie. It's very much a Sundance movie. It plays right into that Sundance crowd. I can understand why it was such a big hit at Sundance. I can understand why it was a big hit at the Cannes Film Festival. People there don't know anything about being black except what they see on the screen. And they see this, and they think, oh, voila, now I know what it's like to be a black man. Now I have seen Fruitvale Station. It's the thing. You know, it's I've seen it before, and you'll see a lot of films like this again. And when you compare a film like this, like with the other film you mentioned, 12 Years a Slave, which I am dying to see. I can't wait to see this picture. I will tell you, I don't think it's going to get much of a black audience. This is not Django. This is not a fantasy. This is based on a real book. Actually, this is the second film version of this story. The first one was made 20 years ago by Gordon Parks, his last feature, with Avery Brooks.
Gordon Parks, yeah. Right.
Right, with Avery Brooks in the lead. So this is a new version. And also because this is a black British director, Steve McQueen, who has done two remarkable movies. He's a visual artist, but occasionally he dabbles in movies like Shame and Hunger. Both with Michael Fassbender. Michael Fassbender is in this movie. The trailer looks interesting. I will tell you, a couple months ago, we wrote this on Shadow and Act. There have been test screenings of this movie several months ago in Chicago, around the country. There were two in Chicago. Actually, there were three in which the black audience did not treat this film well. I'm sad to say. Because
Why do you think that is? Now, we only have a few minutes remaining. Unfortunately, we're going to have to do this on Wednesday, part two. Sorry about that, Serge. But I will say this much. You have a learned, free man. And there's not enough stories. Because I have my issue with slavery on film also. But there's not enough stories about free black people also during this time period. So you have a free black man, learned, not a stereotype, that is captured as
right.
a slave. During the slavery period, that's a fascinating story. So now what can
Because very simple. The problem is that we still have psychological damage from slavery. That's it. Django is a fantasy. Mandingo, hey, he got the white chick. That's a fantasy. But when you're dealing realistically with slavery, black people can't deal with that. It's too painful. We're still ashamed. We are still very much ashamed of our history. I am not surprised that it was a black British director who made this picture. I'm not surprised that it's a black British actor who's playing the lead.
Chiwetel Ejiofor, if I'm pronouncing his correct name correctly?
Chiwetel Ejiofor. Who is Nigerian, of the Nigerian descent, who is British, born in London. I mean, I'm not surprised. I'll be honest with you. Unless it's an independent filmmaker, Charles Burnett has made a film about slavery, unless it's an independent filmmaker like Charles Burnett and maybe Julie Dash, I can't think of a black director, African-American, who will make a film like this about the reality, brutality of slavery.
Well, Brad Pitt's name is attached to this, though. He's a producer on this film.
He produced it.
Maybe,
it was his production company, Plan B, that, you know,
maybe his name will lend some star power
to it. Maybe his name will lend some star power to it.
Well, that's what they're going for. That's what they're hoping. That his name and Michael Fassbender's getting a name, that it will check. It wasn't made for a lot of money. It was made for a fraction of what it cost to make Django. Maybe about a fourth of what it cost to make Django. It cost one-tenth what it cost to make Pacific Rim. So, you know, it has a, it, so there, even though it looks great, it looks fantastic, it was a very, very modestly budgeted movie. So they know that you can't spend a lot of money on a film like this because it's going to have a limited appeal.
Well, couldn't one say that Django could have had that, you know, the same argument could be made about Django somewhat?
No, because Django's a fantasy. It was a fantasy. He gets to kill the white people. Number two is Tarantino. Tarantino supersedes everything. I remember I had a debate with the movie before it came out with a friend of mine who claimed that nobody would see this picture. And I said, you don't understand. It's Quentin Tarantino. That supersedes everything. Everything. He can make a film about anything, and people go out and see it. And once again, it was a revenge fantasy. It was Three the Hard Way. It was Slaughter's Big Ripoff. I mean, combined with Italian Westerns and everything else. That film could not lose. It could not lose. It got white people, it got black people, it got a lot of black women. It got a lot of black women because here's one of the very, very few movies in which a black man goes through hell and high water to save the woman he loves. When's the last time you saw a black film like that?
One thing, Captain, you were going to say something?
No, I wasn't. Nope.
All right. Listen, Serge, we got under a minute. So let's revisit this if you'd like. If you could stop by next Wednesday, we'll do the first part of the show to revisit what's going on in Shadow and Act. We have to talk about The Butler. I mean, some of the trailers about black filmmaking I really want to get into for our audience. Stuff that's not necessarily of a minstrel variety. But down with the minstrel.
No, now it's called Lee Daniels, The Butler. That's the official title.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got to talk about that lawsuit and their loss of it. All right, listen, as always, Sergio, we appreciate you supporting, and we'll get back to it on Wednesday. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been real. We'll be back on Wednesday with more stuff. This is Jazzy Jeff, Fresh Prince, Summertime. See you on Wednesday.
It's about that time again. So we back.
Here it is.
With the soundtrack to your summer. Yeah. DJ Jazzy Jeff and Mick Boogie present to you the mixtape Summertime Part 2. Come on.
Here it is, the groove slightly transformed. Just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past. Adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime.
Summertime.